You might be aware that this week the DINA Project released its most harrowing report to date. It's entitled A Quest for Justice, October the 7th and Beyond. Now, the DINA Project was established in late 2023, shortly after October the 7th, by a group of Israeli legal experts, journalists, human rights advocates, and trauma specialists. And its mission is to document, expose, and pursue justice for the systematic sexual violence committed by Hamas on October the 7th. And I'm joined on the line from Israel by Etta Prince Gibson, an award-winning journalist and a core member of the DINA Project team. Etta, you've covered conflicts for decades, but this report that has now been released, an 84-page dossier laying out detailed evidence of how Hamas used sexual violence as a weapon, it certainly is different and quite harrowing. What was it like to be part of the team documenting and getting the word out that something so brutal, so intimate, and so politically fraught took place?
And I think that for us, or I'll speak for myself, of course, it's even more difficult because I'm an Israeli. I live here. October 7th, while I, thank God, was not a victim, I live in Jerusalem, it affected all of us. The attacks were at our homes, on our bodies. All Israelis feel violated and attacked and insecure. And so it became, although I've spoken to victims of violence before in other places, this had another aspect to it. Another aspect is, of course, that the violence committed by Hamas was so brutal and so horrific that I am astounded. The other thing was fighting with many people in the world to say this actually did.
You're breaking up. You're breaking up, and we don't hear you clearly. So, if I could just ask you to move while I ask you the next question.
Absolutely.
Many, as you say, many still refuse to believe that sexual violence was systematically used on October the 7th. Why do you think there is such denial, even amongst feminist circles?
I'm not sure that they believe that they don't believe. I mean, that would be the first thing that I would say. I think that we live in such a hyper-politicized world right now that you can only be on one side or the other, and there's no room for complicated thinking. So if I am, quote, pro-Palestinian, then there's no room to say in today's world, yes, but at the same time, the Palestinians did on October 7th and subsequently and often horrific, horrific things. At the same time, if I am pro-Israel, I experienced this often enough as a journalist. If I am, quote, pro-Israel, then I'm not allowed to report on the negative things that Israel did. Mm. Or the conditions in the prisons in Israel, or any of the other things that we're doing, I can only have a positive opinion. So my feeling is that we live in such a polarized and such a synthetic, I would say pathetically synthetic world, that it leaves no room for thinking or for complex truth. And I think that's where much of the denial comes from. And also, I would add, for younger people, I think there's kind of this emphasis on my experience versus my knowledge. I want to be pro something. I want to be, and there's a flavor of the month quality to it that I find very, very disturbing, to be honest.
You interviewed some of the survivors, witnesses, and returned hostages without breaking confidentiality. What stays with you the most from the testimonies?
Their courage. Just the ability to come forward. Yesterday, when we presented at the president's residence to the first lady, to the wife of the president, the book or the report, and we had a former hostage there whose boyfriend is still in captivity, is still a hostage in Gaza. And she could look at us and say, he touched me, me referring to the terrorist, to her captor. What he did, her courage, her refusal to be, you know, it's so easy, especially for women, to take the blame as though we have been sullied or you know, our honor was defiled. No, that's not what it's about. It's about the perpetrator. And she was so able to do that and to keep her head up. What has always impressed me of victims is those who come forward, victims of it, of interpersonal violence of that sort, and say, you cannot do this to me with impunity. I believe in a better world for me and for all women or all victims. And I just find that so overwhelmingly, I don't know where they derive the courage.
Etta, the report calls this weaponized sexual violence. What specifically qualifies it as that?
Well, sexual violence in conflict, and we are talking about what's called CRSV, conflict-related sexual violence, is a multitude of different kinds of violence. It is, of course, rape in its most classic sense, penetration, without getting, there is a list, it can be found on the UN website, and so without having our listeners be very disturbed, it's what people think it is. It's touching. It's threatening. It's forcing you, a woman or a man, to commit a sexual act on someone else, be that another prisoner or a hostage or on the perpetrator himself. It is harassment. It's a wide variety, forcing somebody to disrobe, forcing somebody to dance when they're naked in lewd ways. It's a long list, and it's a horrific list. In our case, of course, what happened is the majority of the victims were murdered, many of them in horrific, horrific ways.
Unfortunately, we need to leave it there, but we will have you back on. And I just would encourage our listeners to look at this report, A Quest for Justice, October the 7th and Beyond, by the DINA Project.